And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the wind-up.
And that is hammered. Oh, my.
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive. Left field.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 86 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby. Today's a special edition of The Roundtable. We usually have two writers and a bureaucrat talking about baseball. Today we have three writers. I've got Anna McCullough and Fabian Ardaya. Fabian, how you doing today?
I'm good. I've been to a ballpark since 2015, so I'm doing great.
That is outstanding. That is outstanding.
Literal teenagers are cooking, Mark. Like in 2015, what were you doing in 2015?
2015, I was in college, so drinking heavily.
You were a freshman in college in 2015? Yeah. Hey, Grant, you know what I was doing in 2015? Ring that bell, buddy.
Oh, that's right. 2015, it's the same as this year. I was busted, tired, and yeah, it just gets at some... Anyways, Fabian, a quick question I prepared. The Dodgers, they're some bullshit, right?
They certainly can't hit that baseball. I think as we record, I think they've scored five or more runs in every single game. And I think the lineup might have a chance to be pretty good.
I'll be honest with you, not a fan. Not a fan. Andy, how you doing?
I'm fine.
How's the book going? Do you have a book out?
It's done. It comes out May 7th, The Last of His Kind, Clayton Kershaw and the Burden of Greatness. Please pre-order it. Please. I know you guys have, the two of you. I'm talking more to the listeners, please.
Waiting
You'll
for
like
my
it.
Galley copy.
Oh, you're not getting galleys.
Get me a galley copy, man. I want to see all those typos all fresh. All right. Fabian is our Dodgers beat writer. So he's going to be a part of this, what is it, the Roundtable Extended Cinematic Universe, where he comes on because Mark is too busy pushing pencils. So he comes on and fills in for Mark a little bit. But this works because I'll just say it. I think the Dodgers are one of the biggest stories in baseball right now.
Dude, why are you so brave?
That's bold.
You take these controversial stances and just you're willing to stand by them.
I say what
that's
I believe.
Impressive.
What's it like covering them? Man, stupid Dodgers.
Is there anything going on with the Dodgers these days?
No scandals, no $700 million players, no shortstops hitting 600, nothing going on right now.
Mookie Betts was my number one fantasy pick. I just want to point that out. I think I mentioned it last week, maybe. If not, I'm going to mention it every week from here on out because he's good. He's good. Why?
He's in April form right now.
Yeah, and he's like normally not a good April hitter. Like he's usually like May and August are usually his months. Like he's sort of like on fire right now. And I don't know how he's doing it when he's like trying to learn a brand new position. Although it's not really brand new to him, he'll say. But like he hasn't played in 14 years. So I count it as pretty new. And like the fact that he's like a gold glove right fielder 2 years ago. And all of a sudden now is just playing shortstop at a good level. Like it's pretty crazy. And then he's still hitting and has like five home runs in the first eight games. It's absurd.
Like when I look back at his stats in 2021 and 2022, he's hitting like 260. I just can't. So you watch those seasons. How is that possible? When I watch him now, I can't imagine him hitting anything under 300.
Well, he was hurt both those years. I mean, like his hip was like bothering him pretty much all 2021. And like that's why he just wasn't really happy that year, just with a lot of production, with how he was feeling. And then the next year, he like broke his ribs on a really freakish play with Cody Bellinger. And That sort of kind of threw things off. I think last year was sort of his best season as a Dodger. And yeah, I think you're seeing more of it this year. He just sort of is accepting that he is a guy who, despite being tiny, can hit 40 home runs, which is his swing works. He found a way of his reason swing that works. And now all of a sudden he's playing infield all the time. And they say that that's rejuvenated him as well. Like, he likes playing every single day, 9 innings in the infield. Whereas when he's a right fielder, he would maybe need more time off, or he would always talk about how the run from third base dugout to right field would always be so long, would take so much out of him. He seems really engaged right now, which isn't to say he wasn't before, but like really engaged version of Mookie Betts, and it's really scary at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, I still wonder why the Red Sox traded that guy. He's a good player.
He's a generational franchise player. Like, what are you doing?
He's a Hall of Famer at this point. Right? Like, he's at the 65 win mark. You know, I don't even know if he's played a full 10 seasons. This is year 11, I guess. But yeah, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, and it's a good trade for the Dodgers personally. That was a good move.
Yeah. I think signing the good players is usually a good thing for the Dodgers. And I mean, the fact that they didn't really, like, if in retrospect, they really didn't give up that much in the trade. I mean, I know Alex Verdugo is the centerpiece, but he's a Yankee now. Like, I think they obviously did pretty well there.
Yeah, no, they got Jeter Downs, right? And just getting a guy named Jeter in that trade was cursed enough. There is a guy, and not to switch subjects, but when you're talking about Hall of Famers, I don't know what the proper term is. It's not hit by a bus Hall of Famer, but it's sort of like retire and become a Monk Hall of Famer. Like the guys who just, if they stop playing, there's a Hall of Famer. There's a guy in the Baseball Prospectus comments every time they write about Clayton Kershaw who is
seen this guy
adamant that Kershaw is not a Hall of Famer yet, that there's still a couple hurdles for him to clear. And it's not a bit. He's like, he's dead serious. And it's one of the most endearing and enduring internet characters, I think, in the baseball world.
Yeah, Craig Goldstein is fond of resurfacing that guy whenever he shows up. And so it is genuinely a great bit.
It is.
That the guy is just like, he just every time is like, look, he's had a great career. Like, he's a really good player. Is he a Hall of Famer? Not yet for me, buddy.
Is one of the requirements that Andy writes a book about him, or?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I was having a conversation, so I was doing this book. I was talking to a scout kind of about him 2 years ago, and we were talking for like half an hour and just kind of going through some, you know, scouting stuff, and he was super complimentary, and he's like, and then at the end he goes, you know, you didn't ask me if I think he's a Hall of Famer. And I was just kind of like, all right, do you think he's a Hall of Famer? And the guy's like, no. And I was just like, okay. Like, I don't know, you know, like, I'm not going to argue. He's like a 80 win pitcher. He had the best peak. Like, I don't have to explain like this. Like, he's better than Sandy Koufax. Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Pedro Martinez. I need a little bit more 21 seasons from Pedro. You know what I mean?
This is completely off topic, but I will. We're here. You know, it's the round table. We like to, you know, trust me, we'll talk about, you know, Shohei and Ipe in a little bit at some point, everyone. But like, one thing I was thinking about, you know, we did the aces list this past year, right? And there was one unanimous ace, and it was Gerrit Cole. And then he, like, while we were doing the thing, he got hurt. Like, if you look at this current crop of pitchers, right? Like, Kershaw's a Hall of Famer. Scherzer's a Hall of Famer.
Verlander.
Verlander is a Hall of Famer. Greinke is a Hall of Famer, even though he's not, you know, currently active. Chris Sale, yeah, you know. Okay, push them aside, right? DeGrom is in the same, like, yeah, you know, peak, yes, longevity, no. Who is the next pitcher who's going to be a Hall of Famer?
Zach Wheeler? No, that's a late start. That's a
he's
late
awesome,
start.
He's awesome, but he's short right now. Like, he's, you know, it's not, yeah. So like that, I think that's really interesting because like for a long time you could sort of, there was always one or two guys coming along who you could say like, okay, that guy, or, you know, there's been someone who'd got, but yeah, I mean, Cole, I think has a shot for sure. But he's not there yet. And then after Cole, it's like, okay, Wheeler, but Wheeler's, he just took a 3-year deal. Like he's on the, you know, he's on the back nine. I don't know. I just found that to be kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking up Yu Darvish now and it's like, yeah, that's not, you know, that's not even like Mark Burley. You know, he's had his seasons, but That's a heck of a question. That's a head scratcher. But we're clearly forgetting someone. There's like someone at home right now just freaking going nuts that we have not mentioned.
Ring the bell. Do it.
Framber. No, I don't know.
No,
man.
It's not Corbin Burns, right? Like Corbin Burns is, you know, again, this is not to slight any of these guys, but they're just not Hall of Famers yet. You know, it's not Corbin Burns. Like Strider's a young man.
Yeah, like if Corbin Burns does this for 10 more years, that's what you're saying.
You know, or five. You know, five more years. He's at least had a peak. You know, worth discussing. You know, and then who else is like in the top of the heap in terms of pitching? It's like, you know, Wheeler, you know, Burns, Strider, but you know, and then you get into like, okay, Kevin Gausman. Great player, but like, no, he's not there yet. You know, he probably won't get there. He'll probably just have to settle for being a DECA millionaire who's really good at baseball. You know, there's so many guys who fit that category, but like the next pitcher, you know, I get, you know, if you can go into relievers, right, you can talk about Kimbrel, you know, Chapman, Jansen, all maybes. Kimbrel is probably certainly going to get in, you know, then Josh Hader. I don't know. I found that. I wish we'd prep for this, but that sort of diversion, I was thinking about that the other day.
Even like multiple time Cy Young winners, like there's Snell, but like, is Snell gonna really?
No chance.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
That's rude. But like, as of right now, no. Like, yeah. He is not even.
Like, exactly. That like, kind of proves the point. Like, even multiple time Cy Young winners, like, it's just, there's just not a guy.
When I looked up pitchers who had won the Cy Young more than five or more years apart, it's like Gaylord Perry and you're talking Randy Johnson. You know, you're going through and it's all these inner circle Hall of Famers and then Blake Snell. You know, it's just, I'll say it again. I think the game's changed.
I think that for me is like the easiest way to explain to sort of like lay people, you know, how pitching is different, right? Is that pitching has never been better. But there's very few guys who are going to be able to have a sustainable enough career, you know, to really be in that sort of inner circle.
Yeah, and even like some of the top shelf teams, like you see like the Dodgers, like they, some of the guys in the rotation, like you probably think upside wise, like probably fit that bill, but like they're all going to be throwing on extra rest this season. Like their numbers, like counting stats are not going to be the same. They're going to try to like, they value October as much. So they're not going to like be wearing 200 innings a season just to even get to the end of the year.
Do you think in 30 years, the Hall of Fame is just going to adjust and like, wow, this guy has 100 wins. Woohoo! You know, that's, that's incredible. He's in the 100 win club. Or do you think it's going to be thinner?
Well, that's part of it is like, I did a story about this last year when Kershaw got to 200 wins. And it was kind of like, who's going to be the next person, you know, in the 200 win club? And it was like, Wainwright was like 3 wins away, and that took him 6 months to get to. And then it was Garrett Cole who was like 70 wins away, and no one else like had a chance, you know, to get to 200. And 200 used to be like, hey, Tommy John, thanks for trying, man. But like, no, you are not. I mean, like, there's other reasons probably why he fell off the ballot, but like Curt Schilling, for example, there were people who dinged him on that threshold of like not having enough wins and things like that. And so we've already lowered the standard, you know, for what it is. So yeah, like in 30 years, they might say like, you know, that guy, he had a 7-win season once. I'm like, whoa.
Because Sonny Gray, you know, you think of Sonny Gray, right? He's pitched 11 years. He's finished in the top 3 in Cy Young voting twice, the top 10 3 times. He has a career adjusted ERA of 121. Good pitcher, good career. He has 98 career wins, right? And I know, you know, Andy loves his pitcher wins. I'm not necessarily a fan, but it's just different. If he were coming up in the 70s, 80s, 90s, his career would look a lot different. I don't think that's exactly a hot take, but it's, how do you evaluate pitchers like that when you're talking about a Hall of Fame case? Clearly, Gray is not a Hall of Famer without a few more years, but it's bizarre to me. I didn't realize he's just 33, too. Wow, how about that? 34.
Thanks for checking in, Gray.
He can do it.
This is a great podcast because we sort of just remember stuff as we're going along. We're like, hey, I remember that guy. Hold on, let me look up what's his. Wow, he's 33.
Bobby Crosby. Wow.
Anyway, what else is going on in the wide world of sports?
Anything with Shohei?
He hasn't homered yet, which is causing a panic, according to some of the reporters from Japan that have been following him a little bit, just sort of curious when that's going to happen. But he still hits the heck out of that baseball.
How are his at-bats looking? I mean, I'm watching the last couple of days. He seems like freaking Shohei. But is he just Shohei, just not homering right now?
Yeah, I mean, like, he's always been a guy, even when he's with the Angels, when I covered him before, was sort of like a guy, like, he'll go into these sort of peaks and valleys a little bit. He's definitely a streaky type of hitter, and he always, like, swings, like, the hardest swings I've ever seen. Like, it will swing out of his butt a lot of the time. And when it's going great, it looks great. He's hitting tanks, and when it's not, it looks a little bit like this, where, like, it seems like he's out in front, pulling the ball a lot. When it's still hard contact, it's really hard contact, but, like, the timing just doesn't seem quite right in place, and I guess he's got a lot going on right now, so that's an understandable sort of thing, just getting comfortable also in the National League. Some of the people I've talked to have sort of basically said, like, hey, he hasn't faced a lot of these guys, like the Cardinals and the Giants, yet, so maybe there's an adjustment period there, just sort of figuring out. And I think also there's an adjustment period, like, he's probably going to start getting pitched differently just because he has Mookie Betts in front of him and Freddie Freeman behind him. But, like, he looks fine to me. I think it's just a matter of, like, one sort of home run breaking the dam, so to speak.
I was just about to say, reading between the lines, that it sounds like you're calling him a fraud. Andy, what were you going to say?
I'm just curious, from being on the ground every day, how he is comporting himself with Ipe Mizuhara gone.
It seems like he feels fine. Like, it's hard to really, like, read much from him in general, because he always kind of has the same general disposition. It's just now he doesn't have the same person, like, 10 feet behind him all the time, which was always the case when with Ipe Mizuhara. Like, he was, like, literally his shadow. Basically, the only time you wouldn't see him next to him would be in the batter's box. Yeah, I mean, he has sort of been pretty normal. Will Ireton has been around, obviously. Like, that's his new interpreter, but Will also has, like, other responsibilities. Like, he works in R&D for the Dodgers. Like, he still does a little bit of that. He still does some stuff with Yamamoto. Like, yesterday, for example, like, Yamamoto was talking to his agent, Joel Wolf. Will was over there chatting up, sort of part of that conversation. And Shohei sort of walked out by himself, like, looked around, like, all right, like, where's whoever I'm looking for? But it managed to find Brandon McDaniel and start his throwing progression. It's more normal than it's really ever been with Otani, and I think part of it is just, like, he doesn't really have someone next to him, like, that he sort of always has, but, like, he sort of is venturing out and sort of getting used to his own environment and adapting so far.
I would say that I have never related to Otani at all until right now, when you gave that image of him looking around in a clubhouse being lost and, like, what do I do? Oh my gosh, where do I go? So that's relatable. That's relatable.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting story.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
Is your understanding right? Like, I know Dylan Hernandez from the LA Times kind of approached him and asked him some of the questions directly. Dylan, not a friend of the show, but an actual friend of me, is he speaks Japanese. And so he was able to have a conversation with Otani in which he sort of asked him directly, like, hey, you know, like how did this guy steal the money? And Otani was just like, yeah, I can't answer that. Is your understanding that he's basically just kind of not going to discuss the scandal moving forward?
Yeah, that's sort of the sense I've gotten. Just like he sort of like laid out, like, I'm not going to really talk about this after the statement, and like attempts to try to talk to him outside of, like, obviously, like, Dylan speaks the language, so that sort of removes a barrier there. But like, yeah, attempts to speak to him are already kind of limited. Like, when we did talk to him, usually it's been like four or five English questions, and then it gets switched over to Japanese. And there's other baseball stuff also still going on. While he's an active player, I guess we do have to talk about him about baseball, even with the investigation, everything going on. So it's been complicated. Last time also, we wanted to ask him about Yamamoto, just because Yamamoto had a good start, and we hadn't really gotten his thoughts on Yamamoto's transition to the States. There are a lot of unanswered questions, and I think he sort of has basically blanket said, like, hey, I've said what I can, even though, like, those questions are still very relevant and prevalent.
Do you want to talk Will Smith? That extension seemed a little light in my reading. Why? It seemed a little light.
I think part of it was, like, they had been talking about this for a while. I think it was very clear that, like, both sides wanted this to happen. Like, you'll see a little bit of that when, like, both sides sort of want it to happen. The 10 years was obviously, like, the noteworthy part of it, like, the records for most for a catcher. But I don't know for sure. I don't even think he'll be catching by the end of the contract, just considering, like, the position. But the bat is the bat. And I think the Dodgers kind of valued it for a while. The fact that you can get that at the AAV they did, especially with the deferrals, like, it's like $12.2 million per year against the luxury tax for them. Like, it made all the sense in the world for the Dodgers. And for Smith, he said, like, he didn't really want to go anywhere else and he wanted to win. And he's a guy who, like, people will make fun of, like, how little he says, but, like, he's pretty straightforward with how he sort of views things in the world, and, like, he feels comfortable here, and that's sort of what he wants to do.
It is light, like, theoretically, right? But it's also $140 million, and you never have to worry about money ever again.
I'd take it.
And that's sort of, you know, like, yeah, I mean, I think it's a contract that it's the sort of contract that a lot of, like, baseball writers are sort of like, you know what, man? If they just offered me like $100 million, like, couple years, I would just take it, you know? Because it's like, yeah, because you make, you know, $43,000 a year. Like, yeah, of course. Like,
I mean, it's a Braves contract, really. Like, you know, if you start thinking about, like, if the Braves handed out this contract and just put in like 1% to the Braves Foundation, I think we would be waving it off.
I think it's I think it's a reasonable deal for both sides. You definitely, you know, he could have gone to free agency and probably could have gotten a bit more, but it's like, hey, guess what? You get to, you know, be a Dodger for good. You never have to worry about money ever again.
Get to learn Japanese because the two guys that are signed throughout the rest of your contract.
Baseball Reference has him at career WAR at 15. And this brings me to one of my great theories, which is that war for catchers is garbage.
Yes, and agreed.
I feel like there's going to be a reckoning in a decade or two where we're going to look back at all those numbers and just laugh, you know, like it's batting average and RBI in the future.
The easiest way is like, okay, what's Buster Posey's career war, Grant? You might know it off the top of your head.
I'm going to guess 42 on Baseball Reference.
It's 44.8.
I'm such a nerd.
Which, like, you know, Buster Posey is like a slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer.
Like when people are anti-Yachty, Molina, and, you know, they're just like, no, he doesn't have... I push back on that. I think he's very much is a Hall of Famer, and I'm not looking at the war. I'm not looking at the on-base percentage, but just the general body of work. Do you guys think Molina's a Hall of Famer, or am I alone on Yachty or Island?
On longevity, sure. Like, just for, like, how difficult that position is to still be doing it as long as he did. I think sort of helps the Hall of Fame case, and also just the peak defensively. Like, there are very few catchers who, like, during his era who, like, really could cut down the running game the way he did. Like, I think there's something to that, sure.
I don't care at all.
You do?
No, I actually I don't vote for the Hall of Fame, so I don't know. I haven't thought. He doesn't strike me as, like obvious, but I'm sure if I like did the research, you know, I'd probably get to that point. I did vote for him to win the MVP over Buster Posey in 2012. I was one of two writers who did not vote for Posey to win the MVP, and Giants fans were like really mad at me. And I remember thinking, like, okay, like, reasonable people can disagree, you know, whatever. Like, I probably just should have voted for Posey. I don't know, I was probably like trying to be smart, but like, your team won the World Series. Your player won the MVP. Like, what are you mad about?
That is my least favorite discourse, is my guy won the award, but not perfectly. Like,
right.
When Bags voted
it's
for
like
the rookie.
Derek Jeter not being unanimous Hall of Fame type thing. Like, he's in. He's clearly in.
I can almost see the unanimous Hall of Fame thing getting people mad, because it is stupid that there's some people who are just like, well, if, you know, Willie Mays couldn't be unanimous, well, like, that's just dumb. But yeah. But when it's like Pete Alonso wins the Rookie of the Year award, but it's not unanimous because Baggerly throws a vote to Mike Soroka, what are you mad about? Pete Alonso won. You don't get unanimous on the trophy.
But I really knew that was coming too. I was talking to him the day that voting came out. He's like, I have something written. I know I'm the only one on this.
Yeah,
on
I remember in 2012, I had like a long thing that was like about, here's why Yachty should be the MVP. It was just like, I don't know. Now I'm like, I'm older and I don't vote. Like, I couldn't imagine voting again. Like, I don't know what would have to go wrong in my life for me to start voting for the awards again.
Why'd you stop?
When I went to the LA Times, they had a policy that you couldn't vote, and I found I didn't miss it at all. And I also think, like, we talk about this, you know, sometimes, but like, I think voting for the Cy Young is impossible at this point.
It's pretty hard.
Like, the Cy Young is so hard to vote for because, like, as we kind of hinted at the beginning of the show, like, you know, pitching is just really challenging to evaluate. Like, the MVP, it's kind of like, all right, toed up the wars. I'm going to look at these two guys for a while. It's like, okay, Mookie, you know, or like, okay, Acuna, you know, whatever. Like, with the Cy Young, it's like, you got to get spreadsheets and shit. And I'm just like, no, man, there's so many books I want to read, like, before I die. Like, I'm not spending a second voting for an award that pays me no extra money.
So you don't care about Blake Snell's Sierra last year when you're kind of... I don't know. Like, I like the advanced stats, but yeah, like, I had a silent vote last year. It was
more power to the people who do it. I'm just not. Yeah. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you one bit.
There, you said you have a lot of books to read before you die. I would like to read a book on Clayton Kershaw. Is there one coming out?
Grant, we already did.
I'm just gonna do it every time that books
every 20 minutes. Every 20 minutes, we're going to say you should pre-order The Last of His Kind, Clayton Kershaw and the Burden of Greatness.
Yes, there it is.
yeah.
I saw the
big guy is getting ready to start throwing sides in May. He's gearing up for the launch.
He is. And then he went on the SNL broadcast the other day, and they told him he wasn't as handsome as Tyler Glasnow, so he shaved the next day, too.
He's fired up.
He's in full form. He's ready to go.
Wow.
That is funny.
I mean, I don't think shaving is necessarily going to do it. Glasnow's
He's a pretty man.
Yeah. I don't want to get too deep into evaluating Kershaw's handsomeness. I just don't think there's much that anyone can do to catch up to Glasnow.
Your thoughts, Fabian?
Yeah. I'm trying my best.
Wow. What a dreamboat he is, huh?
I loved him in Oppenheimer.
Does he get tired of that?
I'm sure he does. I have not broached it with him just because I know, like, he's new. I don't want to be like, hey, next 6 years, you have to deal with the guy who, like,
yeah. It's like, ask him about Martin Shkreli.
Logan Webb just has shut down the Jesse Plemons stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, well, not shut. It's not like he gets rid of it. He's just, it annoys him, even though it's like verifiably, objectively true.
Do you think that is related to, and I say this as a person who, you know, has multiple chins. Do you think that is related to Jesse Plemons aging like a normal person?
I think it is weird when you're talking about someone who is much older than you. You know what I mean? And visibly much, like if you're 26 years old and you're in the prime of your life and it's like, you know who you look like? You look like Robert Redford now. You know, like that's not... That's not going to sit well with anyone.
That or you just didn't like the season 2 storyline of Friday Night Lights, which no one does.
All very frustrating. I will say Jesse Plemons don't look like Landry anymore. I mean, look, he looks like a grown-up. He looks like what Landry looks like as an adult.
I never watched Friday Night Lights at all.
Watch the first season. It's pretty
good.
Yeah,
it's good.
Okay.
It's good.
The first season's really good. It just runs into... They have a major timeline issue that they like... Basically, like, a major character on the show is a senior 3 years in a row, and they never actually explain it.
And he's
like,
a good student, too, so.
Who's that? Oh, yeah, Tim Riggins?
Oh, Saracen.
Well, no, but Saracen's a sophomore in season one.
I think, like, the pilot says he's a senior.
Is it? Does he really? Okay.
I think so.
Well, the bigger problem is that Tim Riggins is very clearly a senior in season one, and he is still playing fullback for the team in season three.
Okay. Okay.
And then so the whole time you're watching season three, which actually season three is pretty well done. And like there's interesting sort of, you know, subplots and like they found a way to spin off the series, get a couple more years. But the whole time you're watching, you're being like, so you mean to tell me that season one, Tim Riggins was a sophomore? There's no way.
I have the same feelings with Andrea from 90210. Clearly 30 years old when they shot the pilot.
Yes, but Andrea doesn't stay, like, doesn't go back in time. Like, the OC had this problem, too, is they were juniors for 3 years.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, well...
It's a real issue with, you know, with high school dramas.
Well, what about The Simpsons? Like, now I'm... You expect me to believe that I'm older than Homer Simpson?
Yes.
Spiritually, at least.
Fair enough.
What is Homer's actual age? Oh, you wouldn't know. You're a fake Simpsons fan.
Oh,
anyway,
come on now. It's a 40.
What else is going on in baseball? Ronel Blanco threw a no-hitter.
He did. And then the Astros have not won another game.
That struck me as one where the first question is like, so, Ronel, tell me about yourself. I was not prepared for this. Yeah. Chandler Rome did an excellent job covering that for us because it was, that was not expected, that fella.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it, tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Tigers and Pirates, both undefeated. Which one's going to lose first? Which one's going to win the division? Is that something? Is that something we can hit on?
I think the Tigers are the closer to legitimate, if only because they play in a... Well, both teams play in a bad division. But I think the Tigers do have some young talent.
I don't
hate Skubal. They got those hitters.
I don't hate the Pirates either, you know?
I don't hate the Pirates. Like, they were frisky last year for a good run. Like, they took a series against the Dodgers last year, and they ran all over them.
That's such a good adjective.
Both are bad divisions. Like, I could see if you told me either of those teams win the division, I could sort of believe it, I guess. I could talk myself into it.
April sucks for trying to have baseball opinions.
We talk about this all the time. Like, we, you know, all 3 years of the pod, we've done, you know, it's like everything counts, but none of it matters. You know, like what is there to make of anything that has happened?
Yeah, that's what I wrote about today. It's Jung-Hoo Lee. His exit velocity is really good compared to what was expected. And like, that's what I wrote about because that's all you can is you're saying like, oh, he's coming over. He had one of the lowest exit velocities in the KBO. And then he comes over and that's not the case. Like, there's someone didn't carry the one or something like that. And he's hitting the snot out of the ball. So that's what you got to write about. It's just how people look, I guess, or yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like covering British soccer. You're like, oh, this is, you know, it's
like, I like how that guy runs. Like, I watched Jung-Hoo Lee run into a wall. Like, actually, I'm kind of in on this guy. I like watching him play. It's only been a couple games, but we'll see.
There are outcomes that feel somewhat inevitable, like the Rockies being 1-5 and like that, you know, the A's being 1-5 and the Marlins being winless and the Mets being winless. You're all just sort of like, yeah, sure. But then it's also like it's four games.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping the Rockies wouldn't be like this unwatchable this quickly. It's just been bad. Like, the lowlights have been low. Opening day was tough. 14 runs in an inning is just hard to really bounce back for.
And this is when they're opening on the road, and they do this every year because they don't want that Coors hangover. So they generally like to open on the road, and usually this is when you start seeing like the Rockies actually like hitting on the road a little bit because they're coming fresh out of spring training. And if it's not happening now, it's not gonna get better.
I mean, they're the Rockies. We don't have to do this. I mean, guys.
Fair enough. Come on. Fair enough. Anyways, about the A's.
What happened with the wristband thing is fake.
Yeah, I believe that.
Right? Anyone? So.
Yeah. It's probably fake.
Explain it for the listeners.
There was a tweet that kind of went viral either Monday or Tuesday about how the team had sent down Estuary Ruiz and Brent Rooker had sat for a couple days, and it was connecting it to them both wearing wristbands you know, related to that this place called the Last Dive Bar has been, you know, selling to like protest the team. And it like took off as if it was true. And it just didn't like pass the smell test for me, but it does sort of underscore how the credibility of the Oakland Athletics has been undermined so much that them just making like sort of basic roster moves, like sending out a guy who's not particularly great, like, you know, is suddenly seen as like a, you know, a major league style caper. But yeah, I don't think, but Levi Weaver wrote about it in the windup today. It doesn't appear to, they weren't actually wearing the wristband.
Yeah. And then like Mark Cotte like went out and said like Ruiz wasn't going to make the club anyways if it wasn't for Miguel Andujar like getting injured. So like, I don't know.
Was it the Babylon Bee that reported it? Like I missed the whole Twitter thing. So like I was just hearing about it in Levi's windup. So it's, but now there's the note that was found. You know that's circulating. There's like a note, like instructions to ushers, like take away the rooted in Oakland signs and stuff like that.
I mean, that makes more sense than,
yeah,
that seems legit.
That's just like, sure, that's marketing more than like tanking, whatever you feel like is left of the season.
You know, Fabian is working on a book proposal about the Oakland Athletics, and we're all very excited. We're all very excited to read it. You know, Fabian's Rooted in Oakland, the epic story of the Athletics, the Bay, and baseball brilliance.
Rooted in Oakland is just the Angels opening day for like four straight years. That
yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's early, man. It's early. Having hard opinions this early in the year, crazy.
I have a hard opinion, actually. I think the Dodgers might be good.
Again, some bullshit.
I'm not a betting man, but I would suspect that will happen.
Yeah, it is. But just to see it is pretty impressive where, you know, you see it on paper, but then you actually experience a lineup where you're worried about that ninth hitter getting on, right? You're like, uh-oh, if he gets on, that's not good. And then all of a sudden it's just, boom, Betts and Freeman. And Freeman, I think, annoys me almost as much as Betts. Like, why is Freddie Freeman on the Dodgers? No one thought he was going to leave the Braves. No, the Dodgers aren't going to trade for Matt Olson, I don't think. That ticks me off almost as much as Mookie Betts.
I will say, like rooting for a team that's like facing Freddie Freeman must be like a really like frustrating exercise. Cause yeah, he gets like the roped doubles, the home runs, but like he also gets a lot of like the rinky dink, like singles the other way, slow rollers. Like he had an infield single yesterday, he had like a hustle double. Like that's just stuff that would just, if you were like rooting against the Dodgers, like that would just kind of grind your gears, I'm sure.
Grant, if you want to understand how this came to be, many years ago in Montreal, a young man was born to the father who ran a heating and ventilation company. And that young man grew up to be a scout. And someone gave him a book called The Dollar Sign on the Muscle by Kevin Corain. And that young man read it and read it and read it until, I don't know, it's Alex Anthopoulos. You know,
I was going to see how long you're going to go with that bit.
Yeah, I could have gone for a while, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those that like it sliding doors of baseball history. If Freddie Freeman just takes that 5-year deal, like how different, you know, or is what the Dodgers have done? Like, do they spend that chunk of money on another, you know, $30 million type player? You know,
how they trade for Matt Olson?
Yeah, sure. You know, that's also, yeah, totally. Knowing the way they think, right? Like they probably just move Muncy there and, you know, just, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that like, it's worked out great for the Braves. You can't knock it from the Braves perspective. You know, Olson's a really good player, but yeah, they have Freddie Freeman just fall into their lap.
What's your favorite sliding door in baseball history? I like that the Yankees were pursuing both Maddox and Bonds in the 92 offseason, because then you get Maddox and Bonds on the Yankees, which means they don't have to pick high enough to get Derek Jeter. That to me just opens up so many little pathways and tributaries. So do you guys got a favorite sliding door?
Fabian, go first. I need to think.
Mine's if Andy didn't cover the 2014 Royals.
I did. Yeah.
And the 2015 Royals, don't forget.
I inspired them both to greatness with my daily coverage.
It was really good coverage. I remember being impressed. You know, I didn't know you at the time, but I was like, dang, this guy's nailing
no
it.
No one would have heard of Clayton Kershaw.
Pushing him over the top to the Hall of Fame.
The ones that come to mind are all like kind of like colloquial to me. like, that's not the right word, but just like, you know, like the Dodgers just signing Zach Greinke.
Instead of the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, if the Diamondbacks, like, don't swoop in, because if you remember the timeline, like, the Dodgers were, they were, like, hammering out the details of that contract with Greinke. It was like they were talking about, like, the number of suites he would get on the road. And the D-backs just, like, woke up one day, and Ken Kendrick was like, hey, what if we, you know, and then all of a sudden they offered $50 million more. And the Dodgers just, you know, let Greinke go. So, like, how much different is that team in 16 and 17, you know, 18, even 19, if they have Greinke, you know, starting behind Kershaw, you know, instead of, like, you know, they went through a variety of, like, but so many things are different, right? Like, where does Rich Hill go? You know, because someone's going to pay Rich Hill some money at some point, right? You know, but it wouldn't have been the Dodgers, most likely. You know, like, Yu Darvish, all sorts of, there's so many people affected just by that little move there. Not little, but that, you know. Thing. I don't know, that comes to mind. For me,
like, it's the Angels 2019, like, going into the winter meetings in 2019, like, they have been at least publicly, like, pushing for Gerrit Cole. I don't know if Gerrit Cole would have ever signed there. I don't think he probably would have, but, like, they were meeting with Gerrit Cole at Scott Boras's offices, and at the end of the meeting, Scott Boras is like, may I interest you in an Anthony Rendon? And Moreno said sure. And if they hadn't signed Anthony Rendon, or if they had signed Gerrit Cole, like, I don't know. Does Rendon go to Texas? Do Corey Seager and Marcus Semien go to Texas if Rendon's already there? Like, I don't know how much is different there.
There's a lot with free agency and things like that. That, you know, what if Mike Trout just goes to free agency? Like, what if Nolan Arenado goes to free agency? Like, he's probably playing third base for the Dodgers right now.
Oh, that's gross. That's gross. All right. That's enough.
That's all right. They still have Muncy, and, you know, Mookie's their shortstop now, and they have Freddie Freeman at first base.
You might as well just get, like, Paul Goldschmidt to be their DH. Like, those are, like, when you say Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt to people who cover the Giants, the fact that they were both on the Cardinals and the Cardinals had a chance to face the Giants in the 2021 NLDS, you know, if they beat the Dodgers, that would have, Nolan Arenado would have had 17 home runs in an NLDS. It would have been amazing. But now I'm just spinning tails. When we're out of time, we're out of time. So this has been episode 86 of the Roundtable, a subsidiary of the Wind Up series of podcasts. We'll be back next week with Katie Wu, and we'll talk about, I'm a little Cardinals, you know, a little Cardinals, but we'll also just pick Katie's brain. Fabian, how did it go today? Do you want to say something about how long my articles are?
No, but I'm glad to be part of the MCU, the Mark Carrig universe.
All right, we will see you next week talking about baseball, because that's what we do. Thanks for listening.
I was very wrong.